so that there's hardly any need to talk at all. Everything is well organized, you haven't met very much to do, you have only a very few duties here. The breakfast, the lunches are all laid on. You know when you have to sit, when you have to walk. So really there's no need for much talking. And it becomes wonderful to realize that the simplicity of a retreat schedule gives you that freedom not to talk, not to engage in the outside world. So I ask each one of you to very carefully keep that noble silence. It also means that if you're not disturbing other people, because there are some people here who've come on many meditation retreats and are very comfortable with just being silent. And if you go talking to them, it means you're disturbing their silence as well. So talk is not just disturbing one's own silence, it's disturbing the silence of others as well. So we're going to tread so gently through this 9 days of the retreat. Tread so gently that we make no noise with our mouths. We make no noise when we're eating our food. We make no noise when we're coming and going, opening the doors or whatever. To see if we can develop that silence as if we become invisible in the world. Because when you become invisible in the world, you're going very neatly into a very peaceful space. To become invisible in the world needs a lot of mindfulness as well. The way you open the doors or close them. The way you eat your food. In my training as a monk in Thailand, one of the rules which was kept so strictly was that we weren't allowed to scrape our bowls or to make any noise whatsoever, even to the point sometimes that if there was any food which was crunchy, we'd actually put it in water to make it soft, so even when we chewed it we'd make no noise at all. And in some monasteries if you made a noise you'd be thrown out of that monastery. If you clanged a cup or hit the bowl with your spoon. And that's how strict it was. It was obviously very hard at the beginning, but after a while you love that silence there, that quietness of a monastery. Indeed, we always used to say the best monasteries were the ones in which you thought there was no one living at all. Monasteries which you would enter in the afternoon or the evening and you think it was abandoned. Even though there may be many monks living there, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 monks in a monastery, a person who didn't know about meditation would go in there and think it was an abandoned forest. They could see the huts there, but they could hear no noise, no sound of humans, because everyone was that quiet, that silent. There was no external noise at all. And this is pointing towards what we're going to be doing in this week, this 9-day retreat. We're going to be developing the mind in silence, in peacefulness, in stillness, which is the path of Buddhist meditation. In all types of meditation, silence is just so important, because when we're speaking, we're not meditating. When we're saying something, we're actually doing business in the world. We're not sort of stopping. We're not just listening. We're not experiencing the world. Ajahnayana told me of a young novice. He was only very, very young. And he was at Ajahn Chah's monastery one evening when Ajahn Chah started giving the Dhamma talk. Only in those monasteries, Ajahn Chah would give Dhamma talks not just for 45 minutes or an hour, but sometimes for 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, 6 hours, sometimes all night without stopping. And this poor little novice sitting on not just a nice comfortable zafu, but sitting on the hard concrete, started to get very sore and very bored and very upset. And he started thinking, when is he going to stop? When is he going to stop? When is he going to stop? Why doesn't he stop? And this was torturing him for half an hour or more. Just these thoughts, when is Ajahn Chah going to stop? And then of course the novice had a moment of insight. And this illustrates what a moment of insight is and what its effect is. His moment of insight was to turn the question around. Instead of, why doesn't Ajahn Chah stop? He said, why don't I stop? Why don't I stop? And then then as a result of that thought, he stopped. He went silent and he sat the rest of the night in a deep jhana for the first time in his life, just a young boy, because he realized how to stop. That's stopping the inner chatter. If you cannot stop the outer chatter, there's no hope of stopping the inner chatter. So we have to start with stopping the external noise by just being quiet, by realizing there is no need to speak during this retreat. And then you can also realize there's no need to speak inside either. You can be silent and you can experience. When there's a sound occurring, you can listen to it with 100% attention, not interfering with it, with your speech. When there's a feeling in the body, instead of getting into a conversation with it, you can just experience it fully, not knowing what it is, not knowing where it's come from or where it's going to go, but just knowing it as it occurs in this moment. Just knowing, feeling, without saying anything about it. Just to know what you see, to know what's in your mind, or through all of the senses, just to know, to experience fully, taking away this inner commentary, this business, this description, which is actually just a veil of ignorance which covers the reality of this sensory experience. What you say about the world is not what the world actually is. All of these thoughts, these ideas, this inner commentary is actually the delusion which stops you seeing reality. So be quiet. No need to say anything. And not only will you become wise and see the reality of all of this, but also you become very peaceful and enjoy the beauty, the bliss of peacefulness. And this bliss of peacefulness, as I was saying, is what this retreat for these 9 days is all about. As you incline the mind towards this meditation, towards this silence, towards unity rather than diversity, you'll find the mind will be inclining towards a very peaceful reality, a very deep reality. Sometimes that people can study Buddhism by going to listen to talks, they can study it by reading books, but really that's just messing around. That's just preliminary practice. That's just washing the pots, it's not cooking the food. But actually to cook the food, you have to do this practice of meditation, to actually experience what all these books, what all these teachings are pointing towards. And that experience is within the silence of the mind. So we're developing during this retreat this silence of the mind. This silence of the mind is where the mind starts to manifest to you. It's as if it's this beautiful lotus, but it's covered in all these 5 different types of weeds which are growing around it and smothering it. So you don't even know that beautiful, very fragrant, very wonderful lotus is there. And those 5 types of weeds which are smothering it are the 5 external senses of sight, sound, smell, taste and physical touch. The job of meditation is to tranquilize those 5 senses, to take your attention away from the world of those 5 senses, to get to the point where those 5 senses turn off and disappear until all that's left is the mind. It's like silence, it's like stillness, because for most people the whole world consists of those 5 senses. We talk about the world and the reality, and it's what we see, what we hear, what we smell, what we taste, what we touch with our body. We think that's real. We take those first sensory experience to be reality, not realizing that it's just a cover for what is truly real. So we're going to turn away from the world of sight, sound, smell, taste and physical touch. We turn away from this, which is the path of meditation. We're going to be confined in this area of this retreat center. And confined, you may go wandering around here for the first day or so, but after a while you've seen everything which needs to be seen here. You've explored every nook and cranny of the retreat center. And you can leave it alone then. All that is sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, you can leave alone. Because you've got no business there. The food which comes, you don't know what it's going to be. You eat it very quickly, and then it's finished with. The taste and the smell, it's not a problem during this retreat. The physical touch, the body, it's going to be painful sometimes when you're sitting meditation. It's going to be hot, it's going to be cold, it's going to be mosquitoes, it's going to be aches and pains. Remember, that's part of meditation. And the only way you can get some peace in this meditation is not by finding a beautiful meditation hall which is got no way mosquitoes can come in, which is not too hot, not too cold, which has like an air conditioner above each meditation retreatant so they can adjust the controls for themselves, because some like it hot, some like it cool. Even if you've got the perfect retreat center with just the right amount of zafus underneath all of your body, if you were sitting on water beds rather than on hard concrete, it wouldn't matter. There'd still be these aches and pains and discomforts in the body. The Buddha pointed out a way of practice called meditation, by which that you can just sit down in reasonable comfort, but not total comfort, and still move away from the sense of touch, move away from all these five senses to the point they completely disappear. And it's only in the disappearance of those five senses there is comfort, there is peace, there is a stillness of this agitation of the five sensory world. And this is what we call the path of meditation. We're quietening down, but we're quietening down what? We're quietening down the world of the five senses. We shut our eyes in meditation, so we don't see what's around us. And very often I use the metaphor, the skillful means, of when I close my eyes, imagining I'm in some of these remote places where I've been as a monk. In mountains in the north of Thailand, in caves, deep in remote jungles, wherever there is solitude. Because when I close my eyes, I imagine that I am in that solitude. That imagination, that using of the mind to imagine solitude all around me for many, many miles, becomes a very useful psychological cue to developing that feeling of peace inside the mind. From 1 mile, 10 miles, 100 miles in all directions, there's no living being. Completely alone, secluded, peaceful. The hermit in the mountains, in the desert, in the jungle. Alone with no business in the whole world. That straight away cuts away and a lot of the business and concerns of our life. And so much of that business is concerning other people and our relationships to them, our duties towards them. In this meditation retreat, you have no duties to these people. You have no responsibilities at all. You are literally and also metaphorically joined a monastery for these 9 days. You've left the world. You have not got a father or a mother. You have not got children. You haven't got a husband or wife, no brothers, no sisters for the next 9 days. You haven't got a job or an occupation. You haven't got any responsibilities whatsoever for these 9 days. You imagine that. And there's a lot of truth to that imagination. And if you imagine that, it becomes very easy to let go of a world in which you have no business for the next 9 days. And it means that that world, little by little, disappears until it cannot reach you. When it cannot reach you, you do feel the solitude of a monk or a nun. You feel some of the joys of being in a monastery, of having left all of that behind you. Alone, free, like a bird with no baggage. So we use these imaginations, these ways of regarding the world with our eyes closed. Whatever noise there is in this retreat center, I think this is the third retreat I've done here, the noise is just in the background. Even though we're in the middle of a city, we could be in the middle of the mountains or the jungle, because the noise is only like the wind in the distance, just a hum. And it's pretty constant, which means that very soon the sense of sound will just disappear. I'm talking about the external sound. The biggest difficulty in sound to turn off is this inner sound. To be able to not say anything about what you're experiencing. If you can notice that the inner sound, the inner chatter, the inner conversation is just so much noise, and call it noise, disturbance. Like a noisy neighbor when you're trying to be peaceful and quiet. So see if you can tell that noisy neighbor to be quiet for this weekend, for this 9 days. You don't need that. You don't have to have that. And you know, if you really want to be quiet, to stop that inner chatter, if you really want to, you can do it so easily. So often the reason why the inner chatter goes on is because we just do not want to stop it. We're too interested in it. We're too used to it. We're too attached to it. It's a deep habit of the mind. But when we've shut the eyes, when we've made a commitment to inner silence and external silence, when we're just sitting still and the feelings in the body come and go, don't bother with them at all. Because this body, the aches and the pains, the itches and all the other difficulties of having a physical body. Imagine that you're just reading a good book, watching the television, going to the movies. You know that you can let go of the physical body. You can be reading that book and be in great pain. Maybe not great pain, but discomfort, and not realize it until you finish the chapter. You can have all sorts of aches and pains while you're looking at the television and just do not realize it until the movie finishes, and then you get up and realize the aches. You know, if you're absorbed in something else, the body disappears. And this is where what we're aiming for, the disappearance of the body. And so the Buddha taught this way of meditation, a very gradual process for moving away from the body and gaining access to the mind. This way of meditation, in brief, and I'll go through it in greater detail during the week, is going to silence, so going to the present moment first of all, the awareness of the present moment, stage one. Stage two, silent awareness of the present moment. Stage three, silent awareness of the breath. Stage four, the full awareness of the breath from the very beginning to the end. Stage five is calming down the breath until you get to a stage six of the appearance of the samadhi nimitta. Samadhi nimitta means the sign of samadhi, of this inner stillness. It's also sometimes called the chitta nimitta, the sign of the mind, where the mind starts to manifest to you. And the next stage is to be able to stabilize that nimitta, or if you prefer, to plunge into that nimitta, just to be completely absorbed in the realm of the mind. which is called the jhanas. And this is what we're going to be doing for this 9 days. It's great fun to be able to do this. If you actually get all the way into a jhana, it will be one of the most amazing and profound experiences of your life. These are very powerful, moving experiences of great stillness, where many things disappear. But not only is it very beautiful, it's just full of wisdom and full of insight, as I will talk about during this week. Just to actually experience what these things are, to get that data, and to understand how this all works. What are these jhanas, and how they're brought about, and what stops you sort of getting into these beautiful states? There's bliss there, and why don't you go for it? Why can't you access it? Why can't one just enjoy it? And this is where you find out about the Dhamma, the teaching, the truth of existence, what the Buddha spent all his years talking about. Basically, that if you follow this particular path of developing the mind, all along the way, all along the journey, you pick up all of this wisdom. You do need a goal to gain wisdom. It's like going to a university and sort of taking a degree in, it could be anything, like history. It's not the degree which gives you all the knowledge, it's just all the things you learnt on the way. That's where you really gain your understanding, your knowledge, your wisdom. It's as if like the degree, the exam, the qualification at the end is just a carrot which makes you just go that much further along the road of wisdom. Okay, you might get that carrot in the end, or you may not get that carrot in the end, but it doesn't matter. Without that carrot, you would never have striven so much. You would never travel so far. So, I never feel that I'm pushing people too far when I talk about jhanas. Even if you don't go all the way, you'll still go much further than you would if I never mentioned those words. And going much further, you'll learn so much more about the body and about the mind. You'll learn so much more about the way you look at the world and the habits which you've developed over this life and actually lifetimes, which stop you experience the bliss of freedom. This is all what you learn as you go this path of quietness. Ajahn Chah, my teacher in Thailand, would say again and again, you cannot split up the path of vipassana, insight, and the path of samatha, peace. These two go together, they have to go together, they will go together, whether you believe it or not. This is just the truth, the Dhamma. But for Westerners especially, if you emphasize wisdom, that just because of our conditioning we go thinking too much, we go conceptualizing too much, thinking that wisdom lies in these ideas. But wisdom lies in the silence beyond ideas. As the Buddha once said, whatever you think it is, it will always be something else. The reality will be different than thought, beyond thought, completely separate from what you can ever imagine it to be. And this is why the true wisdom is so rare in this world, because people try and reach it just through thoughts, through conceptualizing, through reading, through studying, through listening to others. The best piece of advice people can give if they give a talk is just to be quiet, shh, listen, experience, stop. Then you might see something. However, just saying that is not really enough for most people, so during this retreat I'm going to give a talk every morning. Really, all I needed to do was to give that one word, just stop. And if people could actually understand the power of that, we wouldn't need any more talks. But anyhow, I'll be giving a talk every morning on the same real subject of stop, just elaborating it, as you can elaborate just one thing in so many different thousands and millions of ways. Just like, even like the lotus flower again, just between two mirrors. You get hundreds of images of just this one lotus flower. So all these talks I'll be giving, it's just hundreds of images of the same thing. However, that sometimes you need to keep pointing again and again in so many different ways. But the main point of this retreat is for you to develop that peacefulness, that quietness, that silence, that emptiness, that stoppingness of the mind. And as I mentioned a few moments ago, there is like a clear path into that quietness, into that stillness. It's like a gradual training, like a ladder. You have to go on the first rung before you go to the second rung, before you go on the third rung, before you go on the fourth rung, before you go on to the last rung, and then you're up in the loft. You have to go rung by rung. In the same way, you have to really go rung by rung with awareness of the present moment, silent awareness of the breath, the full awareness of the breath, calming down that breath, seeing the samadhi nimitta, and then plunging into that samadhi nimitta. This is actually the way of Buddhist meditation. I'll be describing each one of these steps as we go along. I'll be describing just what you should be doing and what you should be looking out for. All of the skillful means, seeing the problems and the troubles, the obstacles which stop you gaining these beautiful states. Because if you know the obstacles, if you know the dangers, then you're halfway to overcoming them. The next thing is just to give those skillful means for overcoming those obstacles. You should remember that Buddhist meditation has been going on long, 2,500 years. It's not a new thing. And so it's like a well-worn path. And the obstacles and the techniques for overcoming them have just been refined down so thoroughly and so well and so powerfully. But basically, there's no doubt about the instructions. There's no doubt about what to do and how to do it. It's just a question of not struggling, not sort of trying to find some quick way or your own way, but just giving in and just following these beautiful instructions of the Buddha. Just, it's like the old manual you get when you get a car or you get a new piece of equipment, whether it's a computer or a fax machine or whatever. And isn't it the case that so few people ever read those instructions until something goes wrong? And then they realize if they'd have read those instructions and followed them, they wouldn't have wasted so much time. So I'm going to give you those instructions, the manual which has been written by the Lord Buddha about how to meditate, how to free the mind, how to experience jhanas, and how to sort of experience the blisses of the stages of enlightenment themselves. It's all just so easily, so clearly described, so well written is this manual. But of course, the biggest problem is actually listening to it in the first place, taking it seriously and following these instructions. There's something inside of each one of us. I call it the donkey mind. Now the donkey mind doesn't matter just how beautiful it is right in front of you. The donkey mind would say, no, I don't want to go. I don't want to do this because it wasn't me who invented all of this. It's just that rebelliousness in the mind. But the donkey mind, which is always so stubborn and will never do what it's told. Again, that's even recognized in these beautiful teachings of the Buddha. And there are ways you can sort of get around that donkeyness of your mind. Little by little, we sort of almost like trick you into getting to these beautiful, peaceful states. We trick the donkey. We sort of deceive it a little bit, just so that it can experience these beautiful things. And this will become like the way of this beautiful meditation and this beautiful meditation retreat. It's going to be many days in front of one, and it's a marvelous prospect. We have all this wonderful time just to develop our meditation and to experience more and more the bliss of the peaceful mind. This is what lies ahead of you. I always say it's like going on a holiday. It's something which I always look forward to. As soon as I get into a retreat centre, wow, great, I can just do all of this meditation.
And I know just where this meditation will lead, this beautiful, peaceful, blissful state of mind, like being released from prison. Imagine you're in prison, and then you've got 9 days of parole, where you can just be free of all of these terrible prison officers and wardens and terrible routines of life, having to do so much. You're out of prison for 9 days. 9 days time, you're going to go back again. So enjoy every moment of this retreat. When I say enjoy every moment of this retreat, that's such an important teaching. Because meditation is not hard. Meditation is not torture. Meditation is, if you know the way of meditation, if you know the meaning of meditation, it's the most beautiful, peaceful, wonderful path. And if you can develop that appreciation of the joy of the silence, the solitude, the quietness, the peace, then you're halfway to successful meditation. Never ever look at meditation as something hard or difficult, because if you do, you're adding this perception which is really doesn't belong to meditation. In meditation, you should remember from the very beginning, you're letting go of suffering, you're letting go of burdens, you're letting go of all of that which creates difficulty and problems, tension, tightness, pain in the mind and the body. Letting go of all of this. If you let go of that which is suffering, what arises in its place, what manifests is a beautiful, peaceful happiness. To use the simile of the Buddha, it's when the clouds break and disperse, the radiant, beautiful full moon can be clearly seen in the night sky. But when the clouds are there, the full moon is as if it's not there at all. When the clouds of doing business, thinking, worrying, all of this cloudiness of inside of you, when it all disappears, a beautiful radiant mind will appear. It's such a wonderful sight. So beautiful, so peaceful, so profound. And this is what's there for you. It's good to have a little goal for oneself in the meditation. It's good to have like a goal for the whole retreat. Especially for those of you who've been to retreats before. And give yourself a reasonable goal. What do you want to achieve in this retreat? Once you give yourself the goal, and you make it very clear, don't keep thinking about the goal every moment of this retreat and get frustrated when you haven't got there yet. Once you've got the major goal there, then see if every meditation you can set a little goal. And when you set goals in the meditation, each meditation, where you want to achieve, set reasonable goals. Be realistic about your abilities and what you can achieve. And set that realistic goal there, something which is in your ability to achieve, which is testing you just a little bit, pushing you a little bit further. And if you can set that goal at the very beginning, tell your mind, this is what I want to achieve. And then trust in the mind to remember what it's supposed to do. You don't need to think about that goal anymore. The trouble with people in the world, when they have goals, is they keep worrying about them every moment. The simile which I've been giving about goals, it's like aiming your arrow as an archer. As an archer, when you put the bow up and you put the arrow in the bow and you pull the arrow back as you stretch the wood of the bow, that's where you aim, at the beginning of the shot. But once you've let the arrow go, you can't aim anymore. The aiming has been done. Now you just follow with your eye the flight of the arrow and see where it goes. The same way when you meditate, at the very beginning, you put your meditation object, as it were, in the bow. You aim. You set yourself a goal. You pull the bow back with all of your strength, and then you let go. You follow the arrow with the meditation object, with your eye, and just see where it goes. If you've had a good aim at the beginning, if the goal has been very well and carefully set, it's amazing just how you find the mind will do the job. You don't need to keep on reminding it, disturbing it, forcing it. This is one way you'll learn how to work with this mind. If you don't give it any goal at all, it might feel a little bit peaceful at first. You find the mind will just go all over the place, like an arrow which hasn't been directed at all. No effort at the beginning, that's why it feels peaceful. So you don't achieve anything. The mind is just an ordinary wandering mind. So set yourself reasonable goals for this retreat. And set reasonable goals for each of the meditations. See how far you can get. See how much you can learn on the way. I will mention what you should do at the beginning of the meditation. At the end of every meditation, for those of you who have been listening to my instructions at Nolamala or on the weekend retreats, at the end of every meditation, maybe 2 or 3 minutes before the end, you should always just stop and see how far you've come. See what this state of mind actually is. Give a very short assessment. Peaceful, agitated, free or imprisoned, bright and happy, or tense and stressed. See what type of mind you're experiencing. And then continue the reviewing of the meditation by seeing what you've been doing for all those last minutes. Because this is where you learn. If you find that the mind is not very peaceful, you'll find it's because you've been wasting your time thinking, fantasizing, dreaming, not really following the instructions. When the mind is peaceful and bright and beautiful, you look back and those were the instructions. You've understood them because you followed them. This is where you learn about meditation. Now during this retreat we have a schedule, and the schedule is on the board, you've all looked at it. As those of you who've been to my retreats before understand, the schedule is a skeleton, and it's what you put onto that skeleton which is more important. I'm not going to be looking to see who gets here in the early morning, and who sort of goes to bed early. I'm not going to look at what you're doing. This is your retreat. You have to use the schedule as you feel appropriate. I usually say that getting up at 4 a.m. is optional. You can get up earlier if you want. So if you really see what you need, if you want to get up later, you can as well. Recently I gave a retreat in Sydney. And during one of the interviews, which would also happen during this retreat, during one of the interviews, one of the ladies, after about 4 or 5 days, she came up and said, "I thank you for that little piece of advice about using the schedule according to my own, like, needs." She said, "When I came here, I was just so stressed out with a very busy and high-profile job. And for the first 3 mornings, I didn't get up at 4 o'clock. I just got up for breakfast, just rolled out of bed and went straight to the kitchen at 7 o'clock, whatever it was, for the breakfast." And she said this was in a retreat place where people had to share rooms. And she said all the other people in the room knew that I was sleeping in, and they gave me such dirty looks the first 3 or 4 days. You know, that looks of jealousy. If only I had the guts to sleep in like you, they were saying. And because she slept in for the first 3 days, during the last few days of the retreat, her meditation was so good.
so beautiful, because she paced herself, she'd understood what she needed, and she wasn't going to test herself or judge herself by what anyone else was doing. She needed those mornings to sleep in. She rested, she freed her body and mind up, and she didn't carry on that tension which some other meditators carry through the retreat period. I have to get up early because everyone else is getting up early. I have to do this because everyone else is doing this. Measuring yourself against the person sitting next to you. Don't do that. Wisdom is looking at what your body and mind are experiencing. Look at what you need. And using the schedule as a skeleton, as guidelines. That's why in many of the periods, I said it's walking meditation or sitting meditation. You can sit longer if you wish, or you can do a lot of walking meditation. In Thailand, where I trained as a monk, many of the monks did so many hours of walking meditation and become enlightened on the walking meditation path. Other monks prefer doing a lot of sitting meditation, hardly any walking. And they too got great things. So you find out what you need, what works for you. The one thing which I will say, if you get up early, when you wake up early in the morning, if it's before the bell or after the bell, don't look at your clock or your watch until you're out of the bed. Just get up. If you feel that you've woken up, the body is saying, you've slept enough, and get up. Sometimes what happens is we wake up and we look at the clock, oh, it's only sort of 3:30, I can have another 30 minutes. And so then you go and have that other 30 minutes, and you find it's not 30 minutes, but 1 hour, you even miss the bell, and you feel terrible. The body knows more about how much you need to sleep than you do. Trust that body. If the body gets it wrong and you wake up early, you can always go to bed again later on. But get up first of all and try and see if it's okay to meditate. If you wish, you can come out here to meditate, or you can meditate in your rooms if you wish. You can go out and meditate in the garden if it's a cool day under the trees. Because you're using these whole facilities here for the goal of developing peaceful meditation. So please be wise and don't get lost in some of these habits of the mind of like competing against one another. Or because there's a schedule, you have to keep every moment of it, just like a Pavlov's dog. You know, you're not Pavlovian dogs. You know, you're human beings with minds, with wisdom, with kindness and compassion towards yourself. So see what you need and get the most out of this retreat. So whatever state you come into this retreat with, you take account of that, you work with that.